If psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our illustrious panel of shrinks analyze and psychoanalyze what's happening in entertainment and pop culture. We're coming to you from Nashville and Charlotte. I'm Dave Verhagen. I'm in Nash, Vegas. I'm a psychologist, an author, and a bad magician. And I got to be a bad magician at a magic expo this weekend.
Did you expose yourself there?
Loser.
Frank's mocking me, but I will also call him out and say that last year when the magic expo was in Charlotte, both Frank and Hedderly went with me and bought magic tricks.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah. So it was super fun. I got 7 new magic tricks.
Oh my gosh.
That should hold you off for at least a day.
Yeah, at least.
At least a week, I think. I'm good for a week on that one. So our other panelist, Emma Kate Wright, is sick today. We don't know what kind of sick she is.
I think she's sick of us.
So it should be a much better podcast.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. And you heard Frank Gaskell. He's a psychologist, an author, and the author of the popular Max Gamer graphic novel. He's also our resident insane person. And I don't think I have to guess what you're worked up about today, Frank. But
really?
Let me just ask, are you worked up about today?
I would like you to guess.
I think this is our first recording after the election. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to guess that you're a little worked up about the election.
Can I tell you? I'm not. Because
why?
I've just quit. I quit on everything.
You quit the human race?
No, I'm really worked up. Now I'm upset. Because man, every night I'm like, okay, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, I'm gonna watch Anderson Cooper, I'm gonna watch Aaron Burnett out front, and it's gonna be great and there's gonna be fun conversations. And now it's like, oh, can we please get to real news? This is ridiculous. Do you know there are people dying in the world? There are wars. And all we can do is sit around and talk, oh, cabinet formation. Oh, blah, 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 blah. It's ridiculous.
Poor Frank.
Frank.
So, yeah, now I'm worked up. Thanks a lot.
Well, I will tell you this. In fairness, a lot of times when Frank makes a prediction and he's wrong, we call him out on it. But I think it's fair to say you did, and the podcast is a record of this, you did a few months back predict that Trump would probably win.
Yes, I did. Thank you.
So I didn't think that was even remotely possible. The logic that you used was that Brexit was kind of the foreshadowing of
right.
the Trump election. I actually thought it was the warning shot. I thought people were like, oh, we don't want to make a big mistake like that.
Nope.
Or we don't want to do something. But nope. It was exactly as you said.
There you go. I'm going to join a political think tank. Thank you.
You're regular.
That will help the process, right?
Frank joins a political think tank.
Yeah, that's what we need to correct our political system.
Hedderly, did you get, did you feel like there was a chance that Trump was going to win going into the election yourself?
A little bit. And we'd had some lunchtime conversations and I just had commented, there are people that aren't going to flat out say they're going to vote for Trump because they're going to be labeled a racist or a sexist. And in the same way, some people aren't going to say they weren't going to vote for Hillary because they didn't want to be labeled, you know, sexist. But clearly that happened in some level, that there were people that had made up their mind to vote for Donald Trump, but it wasn't trending. So people didn't know that there was this sort of silent group or demographic that was swinging his way.
So before we get into the stories, let me ask you both, what do you think happened for real? One theory is that they were using a wrong model of polling that was really true in 2012, but wasn't true now and didn't tap into who was likely to vote. Another theory is that you just got people who flat out lied when they were asked who they were going to vote for. There might be other theories too. What's your guess?
Well, the interviews that I saw online were these men in the Rust Belt said they lied to the pollsters, that they didn't even trust the pollsters. And the other thing, I'm just not sure how much they got sampled and how much it was just focused on the cities and universities that they weren't able to cover these rural areas.
You know, yeah. There's a part of me that wonders, I mean, all the statistics show that the enthusiasm for Hillary and the turnout for her was not near what Barack Obama accomplished in 08 and 12. But when you think about how the news was reporting, was there a lot of people that said she has this in the bag? And so their muted enthusiasm, they didn't go out and vote for her because they assumed it wasn't going to be a difference maker. Whereas he rallied up his demographics, I don't think she did in the same way. And so you didn't have those historic levels of women or minorities voting for her.
Frank, do you agree with that?
I think there's truth to that. The best commentary I heard, or what really good, was this guy describing the middle class, saying basically 80,000 jobs have been created for the middle class. And it's the difference between job and work. And that a lot of these men are going out there, they can get a job, but they don't have work. They don't have something that's giving meaning to them. And it's sort of the loss of that middle class, and also just people are just not even caring. They just want something different. They want change. That's all I can assume it is. But it was wild. That was absolutely, and the whole electoral college versus popular vote, that whole controversy, it's crazy.
It is way crazy. I think this has got to be the biggest political upset in U.S. history, maybe in just the history of politics. I mean, it's definitely up there.
Yeah.
There were polling models. Now, Nate Silver's polling model gave it like 70% chance that Hillary would win. Well, that's still 70. I mean, you know, that's mm-hmm. 2/3 of a chance. But some of the polling models, like it might have been Princeton and another one, gave it in the 90s,
yeah.
90 to 99% chance. Now, if something is a 99% chance it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Right.
Like this, that means that there's something so crazy that just happened here that it upends. I don't even know if there are lessons to be learned about how to think about this. I think it was such an anomaly, and I think he's such an anomaly. I don't know what you can extract from it to learn from it.
Yeah, there's the, I can't think of his name, but he's correctly predicted every election since the 80s.
Is it the professor guy?
Yeah. It's just based on a 13-question true-false survey. And he's gotten it right every time. He was on the news saying that he said we can all expect Trump to actually be impeached.
Yeah, I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
So his prediction was that he was going to win. And he was one of the only voices out there that wasn't partisan,
right,
who was saying he was going to win. And now he's saying, and he's going to be impeached. I think he said within the year,
yeah,
or
yeah,
something like that,
mm-hmm,
which is pretty crazy. So let's use this to kind of continue talking about our trending topic, which is the changing landscape of news. And one of the things that we saw in this election was a significant shift in news coverage and in how things are reported and what is reported. One of the big stories in this election cycle was that a good percentage of people got their news from Facebook, and they were getting news that was completely, in some cases, made up.
Right.
So what do you guys make of this sort of changing landscape of news and how news itself has been changed probably, I don't know, for good by this whole election cycle?
I am very disheartened by news across the board. When I was growing up, it was, you know, Walter Cronkite, Dan Rather, Peter Jennings, and they were anchoring this newscast. But then you'd have reporters on the ground providing on-site report of a war, of an election, of, you know, a sporting – that they were there. And it feels as if all those reporters are gone, or at least dramatically reduced. And now it's just a bunch of talking heads, and it has less to do with fact and more with opinion.
Right. So now the way that news is framed isn't like somebody on the ground who's collecting facts. Although, in fairness, some guys like Anderson Cooper yes. and others have done that. But it's more of like, let's assemble a panel mm-hmm. to give their opinion and to kind of snipe at each other. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a constructed drama that it's like yeah. we're having a little debate that people are getting heated about, and then people get drawn into that drama.
And so much of that has happened on news outlets that it really waters down their authority to report news and what's going on. Another challenge is simply a 24-hour news cycle. There's a lot of news is just, it is boring. It's not sensational. It's just giving people information about what's going on in the world. But when you have to compete with all these other outlets and social media for headlines, it just becomes more sensationalized. Then you have to come up with news cycles for 24 hours in a day. You start adding pundits and commentators and people that have no business even being associated with news reporting. I remember in my lifetime, Dan Rather got fired from CBS because of the controversy or the validity of reporting on George W. Bush's military service. There's nobody that's going around scrutinizing anything anymore. Simply because somebody says it loud enough or enough times, there's a segment of the population that just absorbs it as automatic truth, and then they move on.
It is a weird cultural shift to go into an era where the whole idea of what is true is up for grabs.
Right.
You know, it's like, so you've got it hitting on multiple levels. One is that truth and opinion get almost to be synonymous, but then you've also got things that are just patently false that are put out there in circulation that people, for whatever reason, can't discern or don't want to discern it as truth or not. They're using it to kind of bolster their own viewpoint.
And we have this platform that we haven't had in the past where we see a news article and it looks interesting and it's just some rag magazine and we post it on Facebook and it's not true. But I'm just really frustrated. I listen to BBC News now and NPR primarily, because I'm just tired of listening to the talking heads. But I think, all right, what news do I want to know about? I'd like to know what's happening in Crimea. What's happening in Russia? I want to hear about the New Zealand earthquake. I want to see reports on that. I want to know more about what's happening with the climate. I mean, the drought in the South. That's all interesting stuff and a lot of news that you can report on, but they're not doing it because they want the ratings.
Right. And those things aren't sexy, and they're not right. They're not these little dramas that they can construct. And that's what's interesting is that when you watch them, they're set up as little miniature dramas mm-hmm. where people are expressing opinions and other people are opposing them and they're getting really upset and they're calling each other out. And it's kind of like the news equivalent of the Real Housewives of right. Atlanta or whatever.
And I don't think this information is false. I read a lot of articles in thinking about how reporting has changed. And I'm 99% sure I read one article that said the number of actual reporters is down 70% over the last 10, 15 years.
And is that 70% on the networks or across the board, including the cable outlets?
Across the board.
Well, if Frank says it's 99% sure, well, then it's going to happen. Hey, it's true.
I picked the election.
It's true.
Take it to the bank. Well, one thing that's interesting psychologically that I've been thinking about is, you know, it is true that most people in journalism tend to be more liberally minded. They're more politically liberal. I mean, there are lots of surveys and polls that have borne that out. What's interesting to me is there's got to be incredible dissonance for them to know that they've got a ringer from a ratings perspective in Trump, but also being completely put off by him and, you know, almost to the point of disgust. So like, that's got to be, you're in a business where you're like, okay, we have to compete in this marketplace now. It's not just the three networks. and we've got this guy who's going to draw a crowd. And yet by doing that and giving him a lot of airtime and discussion time, it's going to actually bolster him. And we're making it more likely that he gets closer to what he wants. That's got to be weird. I don't know how you think about that in that industry.
Well, I mean, you think about, we've had, I mean, Trump clearly is what we might call an extreme example, but even if the media has trended liberal for a long time, we've had Republican, you know, presidents, we've had conservative government. I think it really is, I used to think of the media in the same way as like law enforcement or a doctor, like regardless of your personal beliefs, you had this duty in your profession, and you really went about it in a very apolitical manner. Like police officers or first responders, they don't get to have their personal beliefs inform who they help. They just do that. And I feel like with the media, they've allowed their own personal beliefs to kind of saturate what they think their role and responsibility is in journalism.
If I was the head of a news department, or if I own CNN, man, I'd be clearing out people so fast. I mean, how do you miss a story this big? And it's also, I think, in some of these newsrooms, it's an echo chamber. They're all just talking about the same thing. They are like-minded. And I also heard a great interview this morning with, is it Andy Cohen, I think, on Howard Stern, where he was saying that we're in a situation that if a Trump meets with a Bernie Sanders, they're going to be like, oh, okay, we disagree. But if you disagree just a little bit in your own party, it's a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, it's interesting. And also, I think back to the other point too, is that it seems like there are two things that are happening at once that are hard to predict, and that is, you've got a very, very competitive marketplace. If there are 70% less reporters, which may or, you know, let's say that's true, but we certainly know that there's less reporting going on, that means that they're getting stretched. They're
right.
The ratings are lower, their resources are fewer. And so just to survive, they've got to rise above the crowd. And then you've got this guy who is a circus act. Mm-hmm. And that's not happened before. I mean, even with, you know, let's say you're a liberal reporter, you're still going to, you know, you're going to do, like Jonathan's saying, you're going to cover fairly, because everybody's kind of middle of the road. They're fairly bland. They're very political. They're tightly controlled in what they say. And, but this is, and so it neither draws a crowd or repulses people. This is something different. You know, what we just had was a rodeo, you know, and so now you've got this thing happening at the same time that you need it to happen. And yet it's at odds with you in terms of, you know, is that really a wise decision to give this kind of rodeo as much credence and airtime as you would like for it to from a business standpoint? Does it make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I've never seen anything like it. It's just unreal.
So let me ask you one more thing about it. So given the fact that news has changed in a significant way and we are getting more opinion and less truth, or at least the truth is getting mixed in with other things that are hard to tell what part's true and what parts are not, how do you think that affects us culturally, big picture? How do you think it affects us psychologically? On the kind of in personal level?
Well, I mean, I think it shakes your faith, but I don't feel like the landscape has changed. I don't think we are improving ourselves as a country. I think we're devolving into this stereotype of some futuristic movie where everything's kind of fake. Everything's branded. It's, you know, pulling on what you believe, not fact. It's become this very bizarre gray world, and the social media aspect of everything, I think it makes it dramatically worse. And we can't, as humans, manage all of this information. I think it's overwhelming, and it's going to mess with us in terms of anxiety, depression, stress.
Do you think it also will tend to make us more polarized and kind of, because it's so much stuff, go increasingly to the voices that feel comfortable and resonate with what we already believe?
We are going to remain a completely divided country until we take care of the middle class and until we have a true leader. And I don't see a true leader wanting to get involved in this mess.
Right. Who would? I mean, anybody that is a person of integrity, that is a powerful leader, why would they? There's no good outcome here. Jonathan, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that moving forward with the news and media, you can't be a passive recipient of information. Like, you're going to hear things and you have to take on your responsibility of vetting the source and what you're hearing on a larger landscape rather than the very first clickbait title you read. Not only do you take in as truth and then like and then share and become, you know, an evangelist of partial truth or misinformation. And then the other thing is just critical thinking. Like, I really feel like America is much smarter than our recent track record is demonstrating with news media, and what we take with truth is, but it really comes back to like critical thinking and not being lazy about everything you hear absorbing.
Dude, America's as dumb as it's ever been in its history. I mean, we're a nation of idiots. I mean,
yeah, that's
gosh.
That's the one thing Jonathan has said this episode that I don't agree with. I don't think we're smarter than we're given credit
no.
for. I think we're probably dumber. I think, yeah.
I think, I'll give you a profound statement. Do you know why the Roman Empire collapsed?
Why did the Roman Empire collapse?
They ran out of wood. They cut down all the forests. We are the Roman Empire, and we've run out of all intelligence.
But we have a lot of wood. We still have wood. So I don't get your analogy.
I don't believe you have a lot of wood, Harold.
And with that, we are going to take a break. When we come back, it will be our doctor's orders. And this is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Hey, Jonathan Hederle here, wanting to tell you all about the Shrink Tank website, shrinktank.com. And Frank, as I understand it, we have a great new video up on the website. Tell me about it.
It's hilarious. Just take Donald Trump and his locker room audio tapes and replace it with Darth Vader and Boba Fett in the shower, in the bathroom. And they're just talking trash about Princess Leia and how big Darth Vader's lightsaber is, and how they are just, Vader's just getting reamed by the Emperor. It's hilarious. And then Vader goes on a TV show to explain what he's done. And the best line is toward the end, where Vader says, "We're going to build a bigger Death Star. We're going to make it bigger. We're going to make it better. We can do it. And we're going to make the clones pay for it." And I thought that was hilarious. Great work by the Shrink Tank team. And you can check it out at shrinktank.com.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. Dave Verhagen along with Frank Gaskell and Jonathan Hederle. And we wrap this all up with our doctor's orders. These are things that we're personally enjoying in pop culture. And Jonathan, what do you have for us?
Well, Amazon Prime has recently dropped their new seasons of their original shows. And so I encourage everybody that has been waiting for the second season of The Man in the High Castle. The second season is now available. I have not watched that yet, but I have started watching the second season of Red Oaks, which is a half-hour comedy series set in the 80s. It's a coming-of-age series, and it's got a lot of folks associated with the 80s, like Amy Heckerling, who wrote or directed, Fast Times at Richmond High. She's involved with it. David Gordon Green is involved with it. It's really funny. I really like it. So check out the new shows that are on Amazon Prime.
Frank, do you have anything?
I do, and you guys are going to judge me for it. But I'd like to thank Sean Beck for introducing me to It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I know it's old and everybody's seen it, but oh my gosh, I feel like I've like somebody has handed me this giant pot of gold that all of it is just wonderful and it matches what's in my brain.
Actually, it does. Now that I think about it, it's like It's Always Sunny is Frank's brain.
Yeah, it's my head on television, mm-hmm. and it is so great. And I watch them over and over. And I love this show.
Yeah.
Have you seen the episode in the bar where it's the dance off and they have to keep dancing? And have you seen, I don't know what the one, the whole episode where, in fact, it might even be the same one. I can't remember, but he's on the boat and you know, those little blow up men that they have in front of car dealerships that keep going and he's doing the same movement as that. I don't know why that's one of my favorite moments in all of television.
Well, I have to thank It's Always Sunny for telling me what a glory hole really is.
Oh boy.
Because I have had that wrong for a decade.
I hope you. I hope you've been really using that term a lot during that decade.
Family show. Yeah. Family show. Yes. All right. So It's Always Sunny. And we will say, with it being a family show, that that is not a show that everyone should watch.
Right. Children should not watch it. Teenagers should not watch it. And individuals who are even slightly offended by things.
Or have souls.
Have souls.
You'll enjoy it most if you don't have a soul.
If you don't have a soul, have at it.
All right. Well, the recommendation I have, I actually on shrinktank.com, I wrote an update on the fall season, and I picked five or six shows that I've been following and gave grades. And one of the shows that I've been following that I'm still with that I gave a lower grade to, I just want to say that I'm going to upgrade it slightly, and that is This Is Us. It is the show that got the most buzz as the new season started, and I was watching it, and I would have given it a B to B minus. I thought it was fine, but not really that captivating. But as the season's gone on, I think it's gotten stronger. I think the storytelling's good. The characters are great. And it is a show that everybody can watch. So I would recommend This Is Us. Good show right there. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Shrink Tank Talk, or you can like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank podcast. And of course, you can check us all out on shrinktank.com. You'll find articles and videos and all kinds of cool things about psychology and popular culture. Our engineer and audio wizard is Zach Brown. Our music director and the theme music is from Sean Beck. For Emma Kate Wright, who is sickly, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell, I'm Dave Verhagen. You guys have a great week. Thank you.